Welcome to another episode of That's So Cincinnati. I'm here with my co-host, Burl Love.
Hello, Sherry.
And to no one's surprise, we do this pretty regularly these days. We are going to have a good conversation today about the Bengals, but for a very special reason.
Our guests are Ken Anderson, former Bengals quarterback of great acclaim.
Yes.
With
Christina Waddle.
Christina Waddle is the director of development for the Ken Anderson Alliance, which is how his foundation and his charitable efforts have evolved, focusing on housing and other support for adults with disabilities.
Now, he has some good stories to tell about why he does this work. It's not just about doing the work. There's a big why behind it.
So we're going to learn about that, talk to him about football, both when he was a player and
now
what's
we'll ask
happening
about stuff
now.
Yeah.
You know, the 12-year-old Burl would be just freaking out thinking that he was going to be chatting with Ken Anderson. I mean, he was big in my life as a kid growing up in Cincinnati, and you know, the heartbreak of the 81 Super Bowl. Everyone talks about the heartbreak of, you know, the Boomer Esiason era Bengals and losing to the 49ers. But if you're an old guy like me, you remember that Ken Anderson and his crew took the Bengals to the Super Bowl in 81. So just a
fantastic
career.
He's been described
career.
To me as Joe Burrow before Joe Burrow.
You know, I've heard that too, you know. So we'll talk to him about that. That'll be really fun, but we've got a couple interesting things in the news to dispense with before we bring in our special guests.
The city is in the business of saving things this week.
Saving things, coming into the burning building with a red cape and saving the day.
Important things to our feeling of community here.
All right.
You know,
do tell.
So Red Bike officially came back. This week, it started this past Monday when you guys are listening to the podcast. It ran into a lot of financial problems, and they were really under the surface. And people at City Hall didn't know just how bad things had gotten. They lost a big sponsorship.
Right. We had reported, and I think we talked about it on this very podcast, that Red Bike announced, I think it was late last year, around that time. Something
probably,
like that.
I don't know. The months do blur together. Or earlier this year.
Right.
They did not have the funding.
They were suspending operations.
And that was a no-go for people at City Hall. Behind the
scenes.
Well,
they lost their main sponsor.
Yeah.
It had been sponsored by UC Health. And without that main financial support, they had to suspend operations. They said they wouldn't be gone forever. But not too many people saw a path forward.
So they did manage to raise $500,000 to keep the program going this year. That was the announcement this week. But that buys everybody time for a sustainable model going forward that doesn't rely on this one big like sponsorship donor. And people are really confident that they can keep this going. It just really is a great mode of transportation in a city our size. Lots of cities have bike shares, but our city in particular really lends itself to riding a bike from the riverfront, you know, through over the Rhine. And it connects to neighborhoods. It really has an equality piece to it. Like the Red Bikes just aren't in the downtown area. And it also you know, really gets to the idea of green transportation, which is very important to City Hall. So they came in with a plan to save it.
And how's
Mark
that going to work?
Mark Jeffries is taking the lead on Councilman Mark Jeffries.
Okay.
And like he really, you know, he took this on without knowing that he was going to be able to get it done. And he stuck his neck out because he really believed in it and worked very hard to get this done.
And while they were at it, they also saved the Alt Park fireworks.
Councilman Seth Walsh. The Alt Park turns out, you know, of course, when are our big fireworks? Labor Day. Like some cities, you know, it's 4th of July, big fireworks. But ours, of course, are the riverfront celebration on Labor Day. But people want to see fireworks on July 4th. And Alt Park has long had them, decades. But it's grown so, and they were put on by volunteers. It's kind of like a small neighborhood thing. But with the
it just grew and grew and grew.
Of a bigger fireworks show in the city, it grew and grew. And the volunteers, you know, I think they took a little bit of a beating, but they were just being honest. They're like, we cannot handle the traffic. We cannot handle this by ourselves anymore. And they just kind of were like, we can't do it. And when they came forward with that, Councilman Seth Walsh is like, how hard could this be? And so he, you know, ended up, you know, working with the administration, figuring out cost pretty much $32,000, which at City Hall is not horrible amount of money. So the Parks Department is going to put on the Alt Park fireworks this year. It's the tentative plan. They are looking for donors, and I'll put something out on Twitter about how people can donate to really help cover the costs. But you can get to $32,000 fairly easily.
Would this count as infrastructure improvements that the funds from the railroad sale could pay for?
I'm going to go with no, Burl. Do not start. Do not go starting something.
You know kidding. What?
I promise you guys.
I'm just trying to fire up all those people.
The budget is coming out pretty soon. I heard that it'll be here. That date is always fluid because the poor budget director, you know, you have to cross all your T's and dot your I's. And so he hates to like say a day. Looks like the city budget will come out the week before Memorial Day, and we will be looking. The railroad fund, I'm told, is performing very well. This is really the first year, so it's not like the big railroad money, but it's kind of starting with this is the railroad money coming in, and we'll be looking at what it's being spent on.
That will be a very, I think, important story when we look at after a year of investing the proceeds from the sale of the railroad, did it meet the expectations of those who said this is a no-brainer? Like, we would do much better investing this money than continuing to lease it to Norfolk Southern.
I don't want to spread rumors because this is like on my to-do list, but I've heard at times so far it's made a million. It's a $1.6 billion fund. I've heard at times since this has all gone into effect in like mid-March, it's made $1 million a day. Now, of course, no fund is, how did it do the last month or 2 months? It really, you do judge it over time and how
right.
it goes.
So when the market's up, it
right.
It
but that bodes yeah. well. And of course, there's safeguards that there's no spending if it dips below a certain point. But I feel like it's going to be happy, cheery news this year.
Okay. Well, we can only hope. So, all right. Well, there they go. The city trying to invest in some quality of life
yes.
things to make this a fun place to live. I've not been to the Alt Park fireworks. I can't imagine. I mean, anything at Alt Park tends to get crowded and congested just because, you know, it's hard to get in and out of. It's not like, you know.
Yes, I believe the pictures we're using are like from the one time I went to the Alt Park fireworks. And so, yes.
So, you know, they have to, you know, work on the traffic, probably, you know, have some different traffic flow for the streets, deal with all the people. The $32,000 doesn't seem like a lot. I would have guessed it costs more to put on those fireworks by the time you get into, you know, I'm sure you have to pay for off-duty police officers and things like that.
Well, I think they really weren't doing that. And that's where the problems were coming in. And so the city, that'll be some city services plus $32,000.
Right. So because it's a city event now, it's
in-kind donations.
Yes. I see. Okay. Well, I think it's time to talk to our special guest, Sherry.
Yes. Special guest time here on That's So Cincinnati. I'm excited to welcome today Ken and Christina. Thank you for joining us.
Well, thank you for having us.
We love talking about good causes and the Bengals.
And the Bengals that a lot of us who are my age watched religiously growing up. What a great opportunity to speak to you, to talk to you about your fundraising efforts. But man, I would be lying if I said I wasn't geeking out as a kid growing up in Cincinnati watching the Bengals. So thanks for coming into the studio, Ken.
Well, the pleasure's mine. And, you know, we go back a long ways and, you know, it's just fun to be back and to be part of the community again.
That's great. So Sherry, we want to talk about, first of all, the Ken Anderson Alliance.
I mean, there's a big fundraiser coming up, and the Ken Anderson Alliance does a lot of good. It's about quality of life for people with disabilities. So could you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, we kind of say that we create live, work, and engage opportunities for adults with disabilities. And so, you know, our work program, we do job training, job placement. In our engage outings, we do adult day services. A lot of it is music based with our melodic connections. We take groups out into the community, you know, whether it's to go to a movie, to go to a ball game, to play putt-putt. A lot of it is volunteering at other nonprofits. So we serve about 300 a month with all of our programs. And, you know, I think all of us started, you know, the Ken Anderson Alliance with the goal of doing housing for adults with disabilities, which is a real need. And we started off, and you know, that's hard and it's expensive to do. And last year, I heard about what Ted Karras, the Bengals center, was doing up in Indianapolis, and I had a chance to go up there and see some of his. And their first project, they took an old barracks at the Fort Benjamin Harrison, where I happened to spend about 4 months when I was doing my active duty in the Army Reserve back in 1971. But they had rehabbed that into apartments and condominiums for adults with developmental disabilities. So I remember I went down to the Bengals locker room, and I put a case of beer in Ted's locker. I said, call me. And so we got together and talked about it and formed a partnership where we're going to be working together to see if we can't get some housing accomplished.
I mean, the housing is so important. We've heard him talk about it in Inquirer stories before, but it just allows people to live independently, and that's everybody's goal, and it's just about quality of life.
Well, no, exactly, and I think, you know, we all have our own reasons for getting involved, and mine, you know, is you know, our nephew, who was severely autistic, but knew that this was going to be an issue, and like I say, our goal all along was to let him live life to his fullest. And everyone with a disability, you know, their fullest is at different levels, but we're trying to accomplish that with everyone.
Your nephew was the motivation. What was, how, when you first started the Alliance, you said you were focusing on housing, but it's grown to so much more. Can you talk a little bit about how it came together and, you know, more about your motivation and some of the early challenges that you had?
Well, you know, when I retired from coaching back in 2009, and we were back here visiting, we were living down in Hilton Head full time after I retired. And, you know, I got to go over to my brother-in-law's house, and my nephew was home. And, you know, he's now 33. He's probably got the intellect of a five-year-old. But every once in a while, something sets him off. And all of a sudden, he went after his father. And my brother-in-law says, can he go outside? And I'm outside for a few minutes, and I got to go back in, and my brother-in-law, his shirt is ripped to shreds, and there's blood, and I happen to get in between the two and defuse it. And, of course, you know, then my nephew, I'm sorry. And then one day, it's 5 o'clock in the morning, he woke up his mother to make him breakfast, and she says, no, Drew, let's go back to bed. And he went after her, and luckily my brother-in-law was home, and they realized that he couldn't live at home anymore.
Right.
At that point, he was under 22, and the rules change when you become 22. But he was in a facility in Pedro, Ohio, and it was 10 cabins, 10 boys in each cabin. Their community center was a double-wide trailer, and we went down to visit him and take him out to lunch. And we're going to take him into town to go to Wendy's, and my wife had brought a big bag of Skittles with. He liked Skittles. So we're going down there, and he's eating his Skittles. And I said, Drew, you better stop that. You're not going to eat your lunch. And so I told my wife to take the bag from him. And we went and had lunch, and we brought him back. And I wanted to talk to the people running the place about housing, because we knew when he turned 22, he can't stay there anymore. And about an hour later, we came out. He's outside with the boys, and we go over to say goodbye, and he's following us to the car. And I said, oh, Christy wants to go home with us. And we walk a little farther. And I said, Drew, you're coming home next week for a home visit. And he kept following us to the car. And I'm in tears. And we get to the car. And he says, can I have my Skittles? and so that's why I knew we got to get involved in this. And so we started the Ken Anderson Foundation with our goal of raising money to buy property. And I got to talk to Mayor Cranley about it at the time, and the Cincinnati Port Authority does own property and how they might be able to help us. And he gave me a call one day and said, there's another group of Down syndrome parents trying to do the same thing as you. Let's see if we can't, you know, get you two together. And we did. And then like we in 2017 formed the Ken Anderson Alliance. And, you know, at that point, our goal was still to try to do property. We purchased some land. We had great plans drawn up and, you know, reality hits that, you know, I don't think we can raise $50 million to build it. And so we're kind of put a pause on that. But in the meantime, we had merged with another nonprofit, Melodic Connections, that did a lot of music therapy. So all of a sudden we had a building. And so now we're into music therapy. We started our adult day services. We started, you know, our work programs and that kind of stuff. And it's kind of grown for there. But in the back of our minds, you know, housing was still what we wanted to get accomplished.
Where are you at on that now?
Well, you know, Ted and his development company is actively looking for property. So we're waiting for the right ones to come along, and they actually do the housing. And what we'll do is do what we do, that we'll do our work programming, we'll do our engage things, we'll do our adult day services, you know, for them, whether it's bringing them to our existing facility probably. But so we'll let Ted handle the housing, and we'll take over from there.
Where is your building at?
We're on Plainfield Road in Silverton. You can't miss it if you come in from one side. There's a big mural of me on the wall. So it is, you'll figure out where you're at real quick.
I know exactly where you're talking about. Is the challenge not just the real estate, the housing, but also the support services?
Well, yes, and that's what we're trying to do. We don't get involved where they live and taking care of them, those, you know, direct services. But what we do is fill a need that, you know, sometimes when they come to our place for the day, that's the only break that their parents get.
Gotcha.
Or maybe it's at the night when they go out for 4 or 5 hours into the community. That's what their parents get. And then again, you know, it's with our job training and our job placement, you know, where they earn, have a real job with real wages to make them as independent as they can be. So we've grown a lot, and we got a ways to go.
I mean, Christina, you're on the ground, right?
Yes.
How much need is there?
In terms of all kinds of need? I mean, yes, we do have a financial need, which is why we have our fundraisers during the year. The other thing is just a lot of even volunteer support. We have an army of volunteers that there is no way we could run our programs without it. We only have about 25 staff members, and we're serving over 300 people. So we couldn't do it without the volunteers. Kenny was talking about the outings that they take, whether they go to the zoo, they go shopping, they go out bowling, playing putt-putt or whatever. While we have staff there, the volunteers are the ones that accompany us and help make it possible. We have volunteers that come out to the building. They might help clean up the picnic area. We have groups that will come out and host events at our building for our participants. It's a bingo night. We've got a group that's coming out later this summer. They're going to have a grill out for the participants down at our buildings. They help with our fundraisers as well, not only to help get sponsors and sell tables, but they're getting auction items, and they will volunteer at the event. So we're making sure that we put as much money as possible from our fundraising efforts to our programs. We host three fundraising events a year. We do a kind of a Battle of the Bands event in February. We do a golf outing in October. But the big one that is coming up this June is Ken and Ted with friends at the Hard Rock Casino. And it's catchy,
I'm not going to lie.
I know. And it's a very easy date to remember because it's June 14th. And 14 is a very special person's jersey number.
Andy Dalton's?
Oh, okay. Don't do that to me. Don't do that to me. Oh, gosh.
We should talk about that, though. Your number's not retired yet.
No. And the Bengals.
And you had to give permission for the team to let Andy use 14.
They called me and asked if it was okay. And what are you going to say? And, you know, and it turns out that Andy wore that number because it was his dad's number. So I told the secretary, go back in and tell him that he can wear my number, but he better play good.
Better live up to it, which is another anecdote in the lore that is Ken Anderson is the nicest guy ever. you know, not give them a hard time. Oh, about that.
You talk to a lot of people. They may not believe that.
Oh, I believe that. I've actually seen you out and about so many times, and you're just talking to fans. And I mean, you easily could just keep yourself separate, except for the fundraising opportunities. But I know you're really part of the community.
Well, no, I mean, I think, you know, that's a lot of the athletes. And I really commend the Bengals of today and what they do in the community. And they have so much of a larger platform than we had back in when Anthony and I were doing our stuff back then. And, you know, and so many of the Bengals along the way, whether it's, you know, Max Montoya getting involved and stuff. Jimmy Breach is still active in the community, and to see the Bengals carry over that today and what Joe Burrow does and what Ted Karras does, what Sam Hubbard does. And of course they get a lot of notoriety, but you know, if you go around town on Bengals off days, and you're going to see a lot of them out helping in the community to make a difference.
So let's talk a little bit more about Ken and Ted with Friends. It's June 14th at the Hard Rock Casino. Some of the friends at this event include the aforementioned Ted Karras, Boomer Esiason, Coach Zach Taylor. Master of Ceremonies is the none other than Marty Brenneman. Who else can you
get to? You know it's going to be fun then.
Live auctions and things like that. But what, as far as the stories you guys will be sharing, that's what I think people might be interested in.
Well,
what might we hear if we attend Ken and Ted with Friends?
Well, I'll give you one, and this is
spoiler alert.
I when guests break news.
I don't think Boomer had ever done this. I'm sure Joe Burrow has never done this, but 1979 was the worst Bengals team I was ever on, and that year they had drafted my replacement, Jack Thompson, the throwing Samoan number one, and so they were looking to replace me. And the team was having a bad year. I was struggling, but Pittsburgh came in. They were 7-0, and we were 0-7, and we beat them, 34-10. They didn't cross midfield till the fourth quarter. In fact, Chuck Knoll told the team, "If I didn't know you guys better, I thought you threw the game." Well, we went up to Pittsburgh later on in the year, and now we're getting killed. And it's in the fourth quarter, and Joe Green sacks me again. And he's laying on top of me, and he says, "Kenny, why don't you stop in the locker room for a beer after the game?" And the locker rooms at that time were right next to each other. And so I showered quickly, grabbed my bag. I walk around, you know, to their locker room. I go in, and Terry Bradshaw was the first guy I see. He sees me, stops his media interviews, takes me to the back of the locker room. And they turned off their sauna and had a garbage can full of beer in there. And he clears off a couple seats. He's Kenny's
with
me. As
one does with their sauna.
So I have two or three beers, feeling better about life. And I go out to catch the buses to go to the airport, and they've gone. And I go, how do I explain I got fined and had to buy a plane ticket from Pittsburgh to Cincinnati because I'm in the Steelers locker room drinking beer? So I'm running around looking for a cab to go to the airport, and there goes our equipment truck. Tom Gray was our equipment manager, and I run down, I flag him down, and I ride the equipment truck out there. And for some reason, our plane was delayed, and so we just pulled up to the gate. It's going to come in, and a security guard lets me in the side door, and everybody's standing around. And at first, I'm a little upset. The starting quarterback's not there, and they don't care or don't know. And then I said, well, maybe they know, and they just don't care. So we made it through there, but like I say, I guarantee I don't think Joe or Boomer would do something like that.
Well, I mean, Boomer.
But these stories only come out later, though, so yes. We might not know now. But later, okay, you do hear things.
There's a lot to unpack with that story too. So first of all, you just casually mentioned that you got hit by Joe Green. That's mean Joe Green.
I know. And I mean, I grew up in Youngstown.
If you look at a highlight reel of Joe Green, most of those hits are illegal today. I mean, that's the kind of physical player he was. So you just casually mentioned that you got, you know, hit by Joe Green and end up. That's funny. That's a good story. Yeah. So if there's more stories like that, I think that's going to be a fun night for everyone.
Well, you know, and it's going to be fun to be there. I mean, nobody knows the quarterback better than the center. You know, I start off with Bob Johnson, who's still around town, a great guy. Blair Bush was the number one draft choice, I think, in 79 or 80 as well, was my center at the end of my career. Of course, Ted Karras is Boomer or Joe's center. So we might be able to get a little insight into what Joe may be like in the huddle from, you know, from Ted. And, you know, of course, Zach is such a great guy and, you know, looking forward to getting his thoughts on the draft choices of the team, what changes they might make, you know, this year going in to kind of adjust all the time. And, of course, you know, Boomer, you know, not only was he a great quarterback here, but I mean, he did Monday Night Football after he retired. He's been 22 years on the CBS pregame show. He's got a great show on CBS Sports Network and WFAN in New York. So I'm sure he's got, you know, some stories. And I need to ask him, I said, how did you feel to come in and just end my career and throw me out of the league? You know, so we'll get to the bottom of this on June 14th.
How close do you follow, like, the team's, like, you know, inner workings now? Do you kind of, like, follow, like, the minutiae of it, like, every day, you know, all of the rumors and everything? Or do you just always take the bigger picture?
I'm more of a fan like you. You know, what I read in the papers, what I see, you know, on the sportscast, what I read in the Inquirer. You know, I'll get down to some practices. That's one of the nice things. You know, Zach and Mike Brown have always made me welcome to go down to practices. And, of course, it's a must during training camp. All the grandkids think, Grandpa, can you take us to training camp so we can go see the players? And I get to roam around more than the normal person, so they get a chance to get
that
some autographs,
like,
and meet some of the players. Yeah. And you know, and the players have been, you know, great to me. You know, I haven't spent a lot of time with Joe. I've met him several times. He's always been very respectful to me. Just a good group of guys. And, you know, and I'm really impressed with Zach as a coach. And I'll tell you one more story. It's, you know, Zach's first year, and they were having a tough year, and they go over to London. And I happened to be over there for that game doing some things. And so they practiced on Thursday. Had their normal practice, went to the airport, got on a plane, flew all night, landed in the morning, went to the hotel, dropped their bags off, got dressed, went out to practice. They're at a little stadium, which I was at, and it's about a 50-degree drizzly day. And after going through all that, very easy, and I've been on teams that you've done this, you just go through the motions. Just get me through the practice. I'm tired. And I'm sitting there watching practices. Was one of the most spirited, well-executed practices I'd ever seen. And so I said, Zach has got the attention of these guys. This is all going to work out good in the long run. And, of course, the next year they get Joe Burrow in the draft, and here we go.
A change of fortunes, right?
Correct.
From one season to the next.
Correct.
So you talked earlier about this current version of the Bengals, not just the what we see on the team, but the organization making an effort to be more engaged in the community, honor the past. You were in the inaugural class of the Ring of Honor, which I think a lot of Cincinnati sports fans were very excited to see. What was that moment like for you?
I think, you know, a lot of guys, us old guys, have been waiting like for something like that. And I know it was always tough to convince the organization to do something like that. But when Elizabeth and Caroline Blackburn came in, Katie and Troy's two daughters, Mike's granddaughters, you know, they weren't hired because they were granddaughters. It's because they were well qualified. Elizabeth had worked in the league office. She'd worked for big companies. You know, they both had great backgrounds to come in here and do this. And, you know, I think I don't know this for a fact, but I think Mike's a little bit like me. I don't listen much to my kids, but my grandkids get whatever they want. And so maybe that had a little bit to do with it.
I think that's an amazingly perceptive theory. That could be it, because they were able to do some things that the team hadn't done for a while.
But they went in well prepared in how this was going to be done. And, you know, I know one of the things, you know, Mike and I had talked about it before, and he had told me one time, you know, Kenny, I mean, how do you pick the guys that go in? He says, the Browns, they just had an old guy that played for my dad go in their Hall of Fame. And he was a good player, but he said, I can tell you two guards that were better than him that there aren't in. And I don't think he wanted to make that decision. But when they come up to let the fans vote on it, all of a sudden, you know, now that's the fans get to decide.
But that's part of the fun, too, because it's like, You can criticize it. You can love it. You can have conversations about it. And it's a connection of the current fans to the history.
Oh, no, no question about it. And it's a way. And, you know, sometimes people, you know, forget, especially, you know, in some of the late 90s, 2000s, when the team wasn't having success, that, you know, we were a really good franchise back in the 70s. And, you know, we were, I think, as good as any team in the National Football League. And so we have, you know, a very good, rich tradition in Cincinnati, a winning tradition with football, and had gotten, you know, forgotten a little bit. And now all of a sudden with that resurgence, it's nice that they kind of remember the old guys a little bit.
Well, I think anyone, I mean, it is hard to pick, but anyone who understands the history of the Bengals, if you put 10 people together and said, okay, we need to have a Ring of Honor, make your list, I think you would have been on everybody's list. I had to, there's so many of these stats, I had to write them down. So four-time Pro Bowler, MVP in 81, the year you took the team to the Super Bowl. That was also the Freezer Bowl year. You should get a special, like, commendation just for...
Well, I got some good stories about that one coming up, too.
Freezer Bowl. Four times you were the league's passing rating leader. And of course, unless I haven't, you know, kept up with my stats 100%, you still have the most yardage of any NFL quarter or any Bengals quarterback. Now there's a guy on a team now that might, if he has a long career, approach that yardage, but that's an amazing list of accomplishments.
Well, thank you. And it won't take Joe long to break it. It was so much different when I came into the league. The rules were different. The offensive linemen could not extend your arms to pass block. They had to keep their hands into their chest. So, I mean, quarterbacks in that era were only throwing the ball 18 times a game. We only played 14 regular season games. And now the game is so much more wide open. And I think it's fun and exciting because, you know, they always say, you know, you win with defense. But, you know, the offense is what brings in fans.
Do you feel like there should be even more games than there are now? Every once in a while, that conversation bubbles up.
I think it's really hard because the players take such a toll now playing 17 games, you know, and it's still 20. We played, you know, 6 preseason games and 14 regular season games. And, you know, and we played a lot in the preseason. You know, I always say that we had no off-season program like the Bengals are in their OTAs right now because we didn't make enough money that we had to work in the off-season to make it to the next year. So our off-season workouts, we started training camp in Wilmington July 7th, and we were there till September 15th.
Oh, they're out there now.
So it's that was a long time. And every day was a two-a-day, and every day was in pads. I don't know if the guys today could handle training camp like we had
I doubt it. And I think, you know, it wasn't that long ago, but to think that the pay structure of the league back when you played, you did have to have an off-season job. And same with, you know, some of the Reds town at that era.
No question.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think, you know, Joe Burrow has talked about it, you know, going to the 18th game and whether you need preseason or not. And, you know, he has said that he thinks, you know, you have to have a second bye week in there just to kind of let people's bodies recover a little bit if they do that. And, you know, I guess I go back to, you know, after I played 16 years, I coached 17 years, and I always thought that training camp was so important to practices to get the players ready. But not only, you know, your starters, but, you know, sometimes the only action that your backups get to get ready is in preseason games. And so I always thought that was it. And I'm always worried about, you know, as the quarterback coach, keeping track, you know, how many reps are we getting at all these plays? And, you know, where are my snaps going to come from to get the quarterbacks ready to play? And now they just don't practice as much as they did. So, you know, but I think, you know, from a physical toll on the players, you know, the more games you play, the tougher it is.
You were talking earlier about, you know, the Bengals reaching out, doing more outreach, the relationship you have with them. It reminded me that you also have experience that is beyond the football field in the league. You mentioned you were a coach. I remember with a little bit of heartbreak, you were on the coaching staff of the Steelers as well. That's the last team that you were
that coached for. Yes. Yeah, I coached 10 years with the Bengals, and then I left when Marvin came in, and Had a great relationship with Marvin, but every head coach, you know, should be able to bring in their staff, and I had no problem with that. I went to Jacksonville for 4 years. Jack Del Rio was the head coach. I think in his six-year tenure, he fired 16 or 18 assistant coaches. I lasted 4 years, so I felt pretty good about that. And then I had a connection with Bruce Arians, who was going to be the offensive coordinator up in Pittsburgh. I had never met Coach Tomlin, but got up there, and that was a remarkable, you know, experience there. And, you know, was there 3 years and happened to win a Super Bowl.
Right.
So,
well, that leads me to where I was going with this. You've been to the Super Bowl as a player. You've been to the Super Bowl as a coach. And I recall listening to Dave Lapham. I don't know what the situation was, where he pointed out you were also in the broadcast booth for Super Bowl, and that to his knowledge, you're the only one he knows that has that trifecta of Super Bowl experiences.
Well, holy mackerel.
Statistic trivia night. Cool, yeah. Let's go.
You know, I wrote about this recently in a column, but I've been working in newspapers long enough. I remember, you know, pre-internet and cell phones, people would call the newspaper at night and have us look up sports stats in the, you know, we'd
this
have all
true.
These references to settle bar bets and things like that.
If you so were in the newsroom at night, you didn't know what kind of call was coming in.
Well, you know, if you remember, I mean, there were no highlights of a game. If you were on the road, there were no highlights locally until the next day. And then, you know, the first time you saw any national highlights were on Monday Night Football.
Wow.
You know, so that's, you know, everybody in the league watched Monday Night Football at least till halftime to see if you made the halftime highlights because it was a big deal.
So because of that perspective, I'll put you on the spot here. You mentioned, you know, you loved Zach Taylor's coaching style. You talked about his practice. Is it hard for you to enjoy football, or are you in your head thinking like a quarterback's coach or an offensive coordinator?
No, I kind of watch it as a fan. I cheer at the same things that you do. Now, I may look at a little bit closer, you know, in some instances. But no, I just go and enjoy it and, you know, watch the games on TV when they're on the road. And, you know, I don't like sometimes to be around too many people because you can't hear what's going on. And I like to know what's going on. So I tend to watch it in my garage, maybe about, you know, a little bit more. But
well, then don't go to a game with Sherry, because for Sherry, it's more of a social
event. But I have to say, my dad is a retired high school football coach, and he's been here for 2 years now. And so we watch the away games with him. And we have to be quiet.
Well, I mean,
but to be fair, he narrates. I mean, he does the extra narration for us. Well, he does the side guessing.
Well, do you flash your press credentials, go up in the press box, you know, see what's in the buffet there, and
things are not like that in the stadium. No, things are very regulated, as they should be, as they should be. And I actually love going as a fan and seeing – you know, I like to get the feel, because I'm a reporter, of like our riverfront and the banks. And like, I can't honestly, my friends actually, they get annoyed by me because I'll be like, here's what needs to be redone at the stadium. And I'll be kind of taking it all in, like with knowledge that I have and things I write about. And they're like, oh, who cares? Let's have a drink. So I look at it from a different perspective too while I'm there.
So now we're going to get into like the analysis part. Your reaction to the draft this year?
I think it's got potential to be a great draft. You never know for a year or so how these players are going to turn out. But when you look at their number one draft choice, all the physical tools in the world. He's got size. He's got athletic ability. And, you know, if he can just stay healthy, you know, and the same thing with some of their other players. But I think, you know, all in all, it's got potential to be a very good draft.
I loved watching the draft videos of like when Zach was calling the players and letting them.
Oh, those are great.
That was good stuff. The drama.
Yeah, you're watching this like singular moment where somebody and their family's life is going to change right there. You know, it's there was not all that drama and theatrics when you were drafted.
No, it was not televised. I mean, you didn't know. I mean, I'm sitting around in my college apartment with a bunch of buddies and. I didn't have any money, but we managed to go up to our local watering hole and buy a quarter barrel full of beer. And we're sitting around. I got to buy it on credit. They thought I might get a chance to play pro football. I spent enough money in there over my college career that they knew I'd be good for it. And then, you know, you wait and you wait and you wait. And I got a call from a friend in Chicago. Said, you just went number one to the 49ers. And I go, well, that couldn't happen. I never even talked to the 49ers. And it happened to be another Anderson that was a defensive back from Ohio State. He just didn't hear it all. And then, you know, late in the day, I got a call from Bill Walsh that said that he'd been drafted by the Bengals. And
third round, I believe.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Hang on. The secretary's going to talk to you, and we'll get you on a
plane. Were you in the bar? Were you at home?
I was at home. I was at my college. We had an apartment I shared with two other guys, and we were there, and then turned into a real celebration after that.
So a couple other things I thought about asking you when you were talking about being hit by Joe Green and the way the game was different back then. Besides Joe Green, who did you dread facing on the opposite end of the football?
I mean, really no one. You know, you go into a game and you're not worried about how anybody's going to hit you or anything like that. You've got a million other things on your mind, and you know, and the hits are just part of it. But people always say, what's the hardest hit you ever took? And I said, well, the hardest hit is one I never took, that we're playing Houston here in Cincinnati, and I dropped back to pass, and something told me to duck, and I ducked down, and I admit I closed my eyes, and I didn't get hit, and I scrambled and made a few yards. I looked back, and there's Elvin Bethea and Curly Culp, two defensive linemen for the Oilers, that were going to come, and when you look at the films of it, they were going to – one helm was going to go on one ear hole, the other one's gone – the other one would have killed me. instead, they're both knocked out laying there. So that was the hardest one that I could have had.
That's good legwork there.
How has time been as far as, you know, injuries and things like that? You seem like you're in top physical condition right now. You could go out there and throw a few.
I can throw. I may not be able to put a shirt on after I'm done, but there may be a little
sore. Can't raise
sore.
Your arm when you're done.
But no, I feel very good. Now I've had, you know, a knee replacement. I've had back surgery. I just had a little scope on my left knee, so no golf for a few more weeks. But, you know, I can honestly say that I think I'm a little bit better than most that came out of the game playing 16 years.
Wow. Well, that's great. All right, so if we want to go, if anyone wants to go to Ken and Ted with Friends, we talked about it, June 14th, Hard Rock Casino, where do I get tickets?
I'm going to let Christina handle that information for you.
That's a great role for the development director.
That's right. Yeah. The easiest thing is just go to KenAndersonAlliance.org. That's our website. You can click on fundraising events. You'll see some information about the event and the link where you can go online and buy tickets online. It's going to be, doors are opening at 6, dinner is served at 7, and the stories begin at 8. We've got a great space up in the ballroom of Hard Rock Casino. We've got a great dinner plan. It's going to be a nice, relaxing evening. It's a great time to get the friends together, put together a table of 10, just sit there and enjoy a nice dinner, and then sit back and listen to the guys.
And you may want to come just for some of our live auction items, starting off with two Taylor Swift tickets when she's up in Indianapolis
this year.
On the floor.
Sherry's pondering this now.
No, because I know what they even go for. Well, I've been at other auctions. This is the best auction item. It raises so much money because she does so much good.
We've got two orchestra seats for every opening show of the Broadway series at the Aronoff Center. We've got an original seat back from Riverfront Stadium signed by the 7 MVPs that had played in that stadium. For the Bengals, it's Boomer Esiason and I. For the Reds, Bench, Rose, Morgan, Foster, and Larkin.
Oh, that's a great idea.
That's a classic one. If there's been a painting out that a local artist did of Boomer, Joe, and I, Boomer and I have already signed it, and Ted Karras' job is to get Joe to sign it.
Okay.
So we'll have that there. We've got an old-time Red radio that Marty Brenneman will sign for us, and this one belongs to the Reds. So we got some really neat stuff that we'll have at our silent auction.
Oh, that's fantastic. It's all for a great cause, for the Ken Anderson Alliance and the good work that you do. And also, I believe, like you said, you've partnered with Ted Karras and his Cincy Hat Project. I can't think of a better cause when you put those two things together. So All right. Well, we can't thank you enough for joining us today.
I just want to make, your ticket to go to the event includes dinner and drinks. So we've got an open bar there. So
to be fair, that's not true at every charity event.
That's true.
That's the thing, because they're more expensive to put on.
Yeah. Well, we wanted to do this. We wanted to do it right. And I mean, this is kind of, our first venture into doing a dinner like this, to this scale. So we're excited about that. We've got a lot of great help from our volunteers and putting it together. And, I know Boomer's excited to come in and, Ted's looking forward to it. Zach is going to be great as always. And, how can you beat Marty Brenneman running the show?
You can't. No. I'm sure he's going to be weighing in if we know our friend Marty. So. All right. Well, I'm looking forward to it. I'm going to see if I can go now.
You have to go.
Yeah, I'm going to have to go. Thanks again for your time.
Well, thank you for having us. This is, a lot of fun. And, it gets us out of the house and, to come down and share some time with you. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Well, I have to say, you know what I feel like is going to come out of the event?
What's going to come out of the event?
A lot of that So Cincinnati moments.
There will probably be a lot of that So Cincinnati moments. And you know what? I was thinking what would be a really great Cincinnati moment is if Kenny Anderson actually gets to where he deserves to be, and that's the Professional Football Hall of Fame, just the Ring of Honor, but
he belongs there.
I was reading all
of the stats, and it's like it's not hard to make the leap that he really does belong in there.
No,
this is the year. It has to be.
Well, I mean, he would. Yeah, I don't know all the rules. We should get Jason Hoffman, our sports editor, who knows this inside and out, to list the possible scenarios. But maybe that's what we can do, Sherry, that's So Cincinnati podcast leading the campaign to get Ken Anderson in the Pro Football Hall of Fame.
I like it. I like it.
All right. Well, speaking of Cincinnati moments, you were telling me earlier about something that screams that's So Cincinnati. And I've never heard of such a thing before. The City Hall reunion?
So,
like a high school reunion, but people who have come in and out of City Hall?
Yes, that is exactly what it is. Former councilwoman Liz Keating, she was a big swimmer in college, and she is a big believer in our recreation department. And so last year, she was on council, and well, I guess the year before, really thinking about what could she do to raise money for the recreation department. And she came up with the idea of having a City Hall reunion. She knew people would come and buy tickets. And so it is so Cincinnati. Like, we told stories from like...
All right. Who are some of the people that showed up at this reunion?
Former city manager Valerie Lemmy was there.
Oh, I haven't heard her name in a while.
And then Charlie Lucan and John Cranley, former mayors.
Right.
Mayor Mallory could not come at the last second. He's always very fun at those events.
Okay.
Pat DeWine, Supreme Court Justice now, but he was a councilman.
He was a member of City Council. Okay.
Yes. Jeff Birding came with...
All due respect to the Supreme Court Justice, Pat DeWine, not a good friend of the Enquirer.
Well, I know, but I try and keep things separate.
So when you go to those things...
This is a small city, and everybody knows, when I am out, and if anybody has a drink in their hand... Now, a lot of times I do drink water these days, but if anybody has a drink in their hand, they're off the record.
They're off the record. Unless you tell them. Can I put that on the record?
That's true.
Yeah.
Or a lot of times people tell me, this kind of came up there because people know I do this. They'll tell me things. And so I don't forget. I email myself, and then I'll wake up in the morning and I'll be like, what did that mean?
They did say that.
Or I'll know to call somebody and remind myself because I'll have gotten a tip. But they know. In fact, I was behind a judicial candidate today in the lunch line. This is a small city. And I know...
At our cafeteria?
At City Hall.
Oh, at City Hall. Okay.
And I knew she didn't see me there, but she was talking like really just like campaign stuff. And I was like, you have a reporter standing behind you. And she said it was fine, but then she changed the subject just because you don't want to do that to people.
That is occupational hazard we both have. I've been to events and there'll be a group of people talking and I'll walk up and they look at me and they have to change the subject.
Oh, that definitely happens to me.
You know, and I have to, you know, I have to not take it personal.
I don't. Yeah. It's fine.
I have to remind them, hey, you know, we're at the chamber dinner. You're off the record. What were you talking about? Because I want to know.
It does work both ways because I do appreciate when people treat me nice when they're not that thrilled with my work. that's a very real thing.
If we're not making some people angry some of the time, we're probably not asking the tough questions.
That is the best. That's our motto for sure.
That is our motto. It's strictly business. It's nothing personal, but okay.
All right.
The City Hall reunion. Uh-huh. Boy, I was today years old when I learned that there was such a thing.
To a great cause. You know what? It's not the Recreation Department. It's the Recreation Foundation.
The foundation.
And so they can do good works for kids. Yeah.
Yeah. Keeping pools open, that kind of stuff.
Really, that's the department, but it's like the extra things. They need money to send kids to day camp. You know, a woman who is on the foundation was there and she was telling me about how when she was little, her mom would send, there was four kids, two kids one summer, two kids the next, because they couldn't afford it. And so that, and it was such a great story because it was the purpose of the event. In case a parent needed the money, all the kids could.
Oh, well, that's fantastic.
So.
All right. Well, should we call it a wrap?
Absolutely.
All right. Thanks, Sherry.